And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, July 20th, 2023. An envoy for the UN Refugee Agency is appealing to Sudanese military generals to silence the guns and end the sufferings of the people.
What we saw really is quite devastating in terms of the situation of the people who have returned and the conditions they continue to live in, which is not acceptable.
And authorities in Eastern Equatorial State fire more than 300 civil servants.
So what the government has decided in the state level is to terminate those deserters.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Intense fighting continues in Sudan's capital, Khartoum, between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. The two factions are gearing up to resume talks in the Saudi city of Jeddah. VOA's Nabil Biagio spoke with Dr. Rashid Mokhtar, a humanitarian worker volunteering in Omdurman. Dr. Mokhtar sheds lights on the dire humanitarian situation for civilians and patients caught in the crossfire, with transportation and basic services breaking down due to escalating conflict.
All of this happening now is related to the negotiation taking place in Jeddah, as every side are trying to make a success on the ground in order to have a better place in the negotiation taking place in Jeddah. Unfortunately, they attacked a military hospital last week by drones with too many casualties and deaths. Like 2 days later, they attacked a hospital called Aliyah Hospital. It's the private sector of the military hospital itself, with drones as well. So yeah, now even no hospital are dealing with the army's injured people from the army.
Fighting between the army and the rapid support forces is in its fourth month now. This is the fourth month of intense fighting. When I spoke with you last month, you painted a very dire humanitarian situation with healthcare being on the verge of collapse. Now, 1 month later, I cannot imagine how things are now with fighting persisting.
They are much more worse. Maybe you hear that we have a obstetric hospital called Saudi. It's not far from El Nau Hospital. And one of the fights actually was taking place over there. And they had to move to be with us in no hospitals. So now most of the people in the area controlled by the army in Prairie are the people who are taking, we can take care of. So now they merge together, two hospitals together, a Saudi hospital and El Nau hospital on the same place. And you can imagine how many patients or pregnant women we receive per day. It's too much, you know.
And we also receive reports of intense fighting over the past few days in Umbad Sabil. Do you go into that area? Do you do work there?
We are not able to get in there. We are not able even to take a permission to get in there. We are not completely safe to get in there. And you know, as doctors, we can't put our safety in danger. That's why we just left it with the guys over there in Dabda, our colleagues. We're trying to manage some injuries to get into a new hospital, which is very difficult. We use Facebook accounts, we use Facebook pages to announce that we've got an injured patient in Mbadda who is supposed to come to a new hospital. And we just ask people if they can get the patient from there. But it's very difficult, I'm telling you. Some patients actually, they arrive to the hospital already died.
Speaking of people unable to get to the health facilities, I was chatting with you earlier and you told me you were going out to see patients who cannot make it to the hospital. We know that the fighting has disrupted transportation and cars are not safe to move on the roads, bullets are flying. How are you able to help patients who are desperate for life-saving medical care, including gunshot wounds, when they can't even get to the hospital?
All of I can do is stabilize the wound, trying to stop the bleeding, and then they should go to the hospital to have proper management over there. I'm dealing mainly with people that with a medical condition that they can't get there to the hospital, either old people, either patients with like some strokes, some diabetic people. These people I can manage to help them in their places, trying to give them some medications, some antibiotics, checking their blood pressure. But you lose patients sometimes.
How can anyone help right now? What do you need the most to be able to help people?
Transportation, safe line of transportation. Like, you need to convince both fighting sides that they exclude patients for getting to get the proper treatment they deserve. These are on the first hand. The second thing is, as we urge all of the international organizations to support the hospitals with medical equipment, medications, supplies, consumables, everything that they can, because I'm telling you, sometimes we even torture some injured patients without any anesthesia because we don't have it.
That's Dr. Rashid Mokhtar, a Sudanese volunteer medical worker. He spoke with Nabil Biagio from Omdurman. Still on Sudan, the special envoy of the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says the conflict in Sudan is devastating the region. Mohamed Afey is urging the international community to provide more support to help hundreds of thousands of returnees and Sudanese asylum seekers who are arriving in South Sudan daily. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Mohamed Afey spoke in Juba today at the end of a three-day visit to South Sudan, where he discussed ways of how to ease challenges arising from the conflict in Sudan and its impact on South Sudan. Afey, who visited reception centers for both Sudanese refugees and South Sudanese returnees in Malakal, says the impact of the conflict in Sudan continues to spread across the region.
What we saw really is quite devastating in terms of the situation of the people who have returned and the conditions they continue to live in, which is not acceptable as we saw it. But we would like to thank the government for its efforts in trying to address the challenges that continue to face those returning population. I would also like to thank our partners, but appeal for more. There is a lot more that needs to be done to really support the conditions, to make the conditions of those who are returning much better than they currently are living in.
The United Nations says the conflict in Sudan has displaced more than 2 million Sudanese internally and forced hundreds of thousands of others to seek refuge in neighboring countries. Afey says the Sudanese conflict has affected South Sudan and the Horn of Africa region.
A pain of the impact of this war has been inflicted on the Sudanese population. You can imagine it's millions of Sudanese have been displaced internally in the country, and many thousands have fled Sudan. And I would like to appeal that this war must stop. The war just has to stop for the Sudanese people to enjoy the life as citizens of the country. This pain cannot continue. And that has also gone beyond Sudan now. And that's why we are here in South Sudan, but also in Chad, in Egypt, in the Central African Republic, and as countries as far as the rest in the Horn of Africa. No country has not seen the impact of this war in our region. Every country has seen movement of population into their countries as a result of the war in Sudan.
Marie Helene, UNHCR country representative for South Sudan, says the refugee agency continues to receive 2,000 South Sudanese returnees and refugees daily arriving in South Sudan through various border crossing points. She says areas where the returnees and refugees are arriving face a crisis as prices of food commodities continues to rise.
The northern states of South Sudan, the Upper Nile, the Barangay-Zaal, to some extent Warap, Unity State, they depend on Sudan for food to come in. They depend on Sudan for basic goods. They depend on Sudan I know it's ironic, for oil to come in. We've seen prices of food in many of these states triple since April. And you all know that these are communities that were already struggling. So I think the impact on South Sudan of this crisis is very, very heavy. And we really need to get more support from the international community.
Helen says the impact of the war in Sudan is getting more complicated every day as the conflict continues. She says UNHCR and the South Sudan government are setting up a new refugee camp in Awil to receive people fleeing the violence in Sudan's Darfur region. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still in Juba, some South Sudanese women leaders and activists are calling on the government to implement the Maputo Protocol to the African Charter on the Rights of Women. The women say the protocol provides an opportunity for addressing gender inequalities in South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Josephine Chandiru, director of the nonprofit Stewart Women, says the protocol provides an opportunity to address civil, political, economic, social, cultural, and environmental rights in the country. Chandiru says the protocol will address gender inequalities, discrimination, and promote laws that prohibit harmful cultural practices against women. She says the protocol also provides a legal platform for addressing child marriage in South Sudan. Article 6 of the Maputo Protocol stipulates that the marriageable age is 18 years. Other South Sudanese laws, including the Transitional Constitution of 2011, has not defined the marriageable age.
Everyone has the right to property, and even in marriage, when you enter marriage, you have a right at the beginning of marriage, during marriage, and after marriage to your property rights. It also addresses issues of harmful cultural practices, wife inheritance, FGM, sexual and reproductive health rights.
President Salva Kiir assented to the Maputo Protocol in February this year, and the South Sudan government launched implementation in Juba this week. Aya Benjamin Warile, Minister of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, says her ministry has developed a roadmap for implementing the protocol. She says some of the activities in the roadmap include educating legal actors, prosecutors, judges, police investigators, and lawyers across the country to implement the Maputo Protocol and other provisions of the law to protect women's rights.
It sends a powerful message to our citizens and the international community that we prioritize the well-being and advancement of women. It provides a platform for dialogue, collaboration, and the exchange of the best practices among member states, enabling us to learn from each other's experiences and strengthen our collective efforts.
The Speaker of the National Legislative Assembly, Jemanu Nkumba, calls on stakeholders, including the government, civil society, and the donors, to implement the protocol.
In our journey on this protocol on gender equality, let us work together with our men, because it takes two to tango. We cannot make it alone. The awareness should go to both men and women, and gender is about men and women.
The Maputo Protocol was adopted and passed in 2003 by the African Union Assembly in Maputo in an effort to eradicate persistent gender inequalities and anti-women behaviors that exist throughout the African continent. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on women affairs, Zambia's national women's football team will make its World Cup debut Saturday against Japan at the games in Australia and New Zealand. The national team's success has encouraged many young women to take up the sport. But Zambia's Football Association is also investigating allegations of sexual abuse in the team that tarnished its image. Kati Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
There There was a thunderous welcome for the Zambian national women's soccer team, popularly known as the Copper Queens, on arrival in New Zealand for their maiden appearance at the Women's World Cup. It's a dream come true for the team, as the supporters all over Zambia and beyond are in a jubilant mood to support them. Most of the players on the team come from low-income households. The Copper Queens' success has inspired many girls to take up football in a country where the sport has been dominated by men for a long time. Barbara Banda, Zambia's national women's soccer team captain, says in a WhatsApp message to VOA from New Zealand on Thursday that her journey as a professional female footballer was not an easy one. The 23-year-old plays professional football for the Chinese team Shanghai Shengli. Banda was ruled out of last year's Women's Africa Cup of Nations after she failed a gender eligibility test due to high testosterone levels. She is Zambia's first female footballer to play at the professional level.
I started from an academy. It's called Galax. I used to play with the boys' team. I had some difficulties with my families and the parents because they really wanted me to concentrate much at school, but and they always tell me, no, you can't be playing football, it's for boys.
But the team's participation at the World Cup has been embroiled in controversy over alleged sexual abuse of female players by some coaches. According to recent British media reports, some players were quoted as saying that it's normal for coaches to demand for sexual favours from the players. Football Association of Zambia spokesperson Sydney Mungala told VOA Thursday that the allegations are not new and the association has dealt with them. Mungala adds that the matter has been submitted to the International Association Football Federation, FIFA, which also conducted independent investigations.
The Football Association of Zambia did indicate that they had conducted an internal inquiry. They had also handed over the matter to the police because some of the allegations were of a criminal nature. We just want the Zambian public to actually rally behind the team. This is a glorious moment for Zambia, and we are not going to allow anyone to spoil it.
Zambia is also one of the few countries implementing equal pay for both female and male players. The Zambia Union of Football and Allied Workers Union is working closely with the Football Association of Zambia to ensure fair working conditions and contracts for female footballers and wants all players unionized. Kazembe Chibale, the union spokesperson, told VOA Thursday that her union is promoting the female footballers' rights, including maternity protection.
The main objective of the collective bargaining agreement is to clearly define rules around working conditions to ensure that all terms of employment adhere to the same fair standard across the industry.
Like Chibale, Juliet Chibuta, executive director of the Zambia National Women's Lobby, a non-governmental organization that champions gender equality, says equal pay for both male and female players is non-negotiable.
Female footballers should be paid the same as the male counterparts because of the fact that the energy and also the training and also the pride that they bring to the country is the same that the males could bring if they went to the World Cup.
The Copper Queens are considered underdogs at the World Cup and are ranked 77 in the world by FIFA. But the team surprised Germany last week when they beat them 3-2 in an international friendly. 32 teams are competing in football's biggest prize and includes teams like England, the United States, Brazil, Ireland and Canada. Only 4 African teams are participating: Zambia, Morocco, Nigeria and South Africa. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in Eastern Equatoria State fire more than 300 government officials. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The government of Eastern Equatoria State has dismissed more than 300 civil servants for not showing up at their workstations. Some civil servants are criticizing the decision of the state government, saying many of the government workers left to look for better opportunities due to low wages and delays in payment of their salaries. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Bor.
Patrick Oting, the Eastern Equatoria State Minister of Information, says at least 337 teachers and other civil servants in the state's government's payrolls were dismissed for allegedly deserting their workstations.
in the deliberation of the Council of Ministers, of extraordinary Council of Ministers sitting number 11, 2023, chaired by His Excellency the Governor. In line of the Minister of Education, the report was more than 300 deserters that deserted the teaching professions. So what the government have decided in the state level is to terminate those deserters.
Some of the affected public servants are criticizing the decision of the state government to dismiss its employees without notice. Dada Patrick works at the state Ministry of Labor. Patrick says low wages has forced many government workers to quit their workstations in search of better opportunities.
How do you feel to stay in one place when you are not really getting something? You have to go somewhere looking for green pasture. Now when you people are not encouraging, you just be quiet, you do what do you think that the people can do? Then I may even decide to go somewhere and looking for green pasture for my family.
Patrick says the decision to dismiss civil servants was unprocedural. He says the government should have notified the teachers and other civil servants before firing them. Angelo Akinok works in the State Ministry of Education. Akinok says he is unhappy with the government's decision.
The money that they are paying us is really too low. You cannot compare with the market. Eh? For example, I myself am getting 14,000 and the sack of flow is like more than 14,000. The problem, they just deceive us that your salary will be increased. Then at the end, they come and tell that maybe your salary will be increased in July. Up to now, we are getting the old salary, but people in the state are getting more than us.
Minister Oting says the state government has nothing to do with pay increases.
The issue of the payment, it is not the prerogative of the state government. It is the state of the national government, especially the Ministry of Public Service. So those are the people who will be talking about the low payment, but not at the state.
Akinok says payment and retaining qualified teachers is a critical aspect of ensuring quality education in South Sudan. He says dismissing teachers will not improve the quality of education. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Mombasa, where Taiba Hatmi studied and practiced dentistry for 7 years before she realized her real passion was caring for the environment. Since then, she has founded a garbage collection app that helps people in Mombasa, Kenya, reduce garbage along the coast. Saida Swale has the story.
Old town in Mombasa, Kenya. And as old as these streets are, the drainage and garbage collection system are just as ancient. But that might be changing thanks to these garbage collection points. This cart pulls up outside Saida Swale's door.
I get from the ceremonies, any ceremonies or outside, which I see a good plastic or bad plastic, I get it. If I have that hard plastic, which is not used anymore, I collect them.
The sacks are then taken to a small collection point where they are sorted and weighed. Swale then receives a small cash incentive for a job well done.
Most women take their plastic to Baustaka because we benefit from them, which we buy their food.
Taiba Hatmi is the brain behind this drive, a dentist by training. She is the co-founder of the garbage collection app known as Baustaka.
The main feature of the Baustaka app is the plastic segregation and trading. You segregate, you accumulate points that can be redeemed for health services. Because from low-income communities, the major challenge is they don't have the funds to pay for outpatient services.
The app can also help locals report and stop some low-cost garbage collection services that illegally dump garbage in alleys across Mombasa County. Rahim Watsahu is the Baustaka Community Marketing Officer.
Another important feature of the Baustaka mobile application is that you are able to report illegal dumping. We want the community to take action by themselves.
And Baustaka has been able to fill the gap, says Rahab Nderu of the Lotus Hotel.
what Baustaka has done is it has been able to build that bridge so that we are actually having collectors, we are having community members, we are having companies be able to come together and actually manage the whole plastic waste pollution problem that we are having as Mombasa residents.
Hatimi and others hope to give the coastal city its dignity back.
My dream is to have the recycling infrastructure set up in Mombasa, to have a recycling plant, waste to energy set up in Mombasa so that the waste can actually be changed into energy.
A dream, but one step closer, thanks to the work of people like Taiba Hatimi. Saida Swale for VOA News, Mombasa, Kenya.
I have some important announcements here. VOA's English to Africa service will be celebrating 60 years of broadcast into Africa on August 4th. Help us to celebrate by sharing your thoughts on your programs. You can write something like, your thoughts about the sunny side of sports. Send a voice message or text to this number, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is. Let us know what a particular news that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa and tell us what stories you think should we cover or how we can improve. That number is +1 202 258 3076. And thank you for 60 years of support. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, July 20th, 2023. We now leave you with Oliver Mutukuzu and the song Wenge Mambo. Listening to Oliver Mtukuzu and the song Wenge Mambo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Hanley, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.